Readers Entertainment Radio presents Book Lights with your host, author Lisa Kessler. Book Lights, where we're shining a light on good books.
It's a new week. Happy Monday, everyone. I know usually I tell you guys happy Tuesday, but the show is going to move to Mondays because my husband's work schedule switched up a little bit. So now it will be on Monday mornings at 11, and you are catching the first episode of that. So I'm so excited that you're here. And today we have Karina Kontis, who is an author all the way over in Greece. So hopefully the phone delay won't make us talk over each other. But but if you have not met Karina yet, let me read her bio for you. She has quite a few books out, so hopefully you'll be able to grab a few. Karina Kontis is a self-published and contracted author, a singer, a mother, a radio host, and entrepreneur. She was born in Midlands, UK, and she can now be found on the island of Corfu in Greece,
yes,
and virtually all over the web. Okay, good. Go me. She's the author of 10 books, and she writes in the genre of motorcycle, club romance, YA, fantasy, thriller, and horror. Oh, my gosh, a girl after my own heart. I did put her link to her website and also her Facebook page right there on the blog talk page. So if you're listening live, you can click that anytime and see how you can get better connected with Karina. So are you here?
I'm here. I'm ready.
Yay! You're actually over there in the future because I'm in San Diego, so it's only Monday morning here, but you're over in Greece. Is it nighttime already? How was Monday?
It is. Yeah, we're into 9 o'clock in the evening now.
Wow. So is Monday looking good? We have a good Monday ahead?
We've had really, really bad weather, so...
No. Do you guys really get winter in Greece? Do you get snow or anything, or just rain?
This makes me laugh when people ask this because they think you live in Greece. They think you're near the equator or something. No, we get really bad winters, really bad freezing temperatures, snow, ice. Yeah,
wow.
Normal winter.
Well, it's because in movies, they only go to Greece in beautiful summer, and it's
summer.
The beach, and so we all think that Greece is just
exactly.
This tropical paradise.
Oh, it would be nice if it was like that all the time, but no, we do get bad winters.
Oh, okay, but you're staying warm.
Oh, yes, got the heating on.
Oh, good. Well, you have a new book out, right, called The Quest. Did you want to tell our listeners about it?
Yeah, The Quest has been a long time coming. it is the second book of the duology, the concluding part of the young adult fantasy paranormal romance, Illusional Reality. The first book came out in 2016. And so it's been a little while to get The Quest ready. One of the main reasons for that is that I got contracted with a publisher who took on both books. So I then almost did a total rewrite of The Quest to get it how the publisher wanted it, and worked nearly a year and a half with the editor on it. So, but it's finally out, and I'm so proud of it. I'm so excited, and Beta readers have got the advanced reader copy, and feedback has been excellent on it. And yeah, it's really exciting.
Very cool. And you guys, your publisher did something a little different, right? It's out in paperback right now, and the ebook comes out later.
Yeah, we've done it a little bit different to how normal authors or indie authors do it. We brought the paperback out to get everybody excited, and hopefully have to go out and buy it straight away because they're dying to read it. And then we're not having a pre-order for the ebook. It's coming out on the 14th of February, Valentine's. So there won't be a pre-order for that. And there is a reason for that. I don't know if authors and actually knew this, but when you have a pre-order and you have all those sales, which are brilliant, and then your book comes out and those sales go on, of course, to your royalty, they don't actually go and have anything to do with your rating.
Right.
So all of those books that you've just sold as pre-order, 50 books on pre-order, that's not going to help you get your book in the rating and up the Amazon charts, which, as we all know, is really, really
right.
important. So without right. having this pre-order, we're going to hopefully have a big jump in sales on the first day, and that should take me right up to the top. That's what we're planning.
There we go. That's what we all hope for. Every book we think, maybe it will be this one. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm here.
I know there's a little delay, so I just don't want to talk over you. Cool. So we can get the paperback right now on Amazon over in the U.S., right?
Yep, that's right. Over in on Amazon.co.uk and on .com.
Great. Can you give us a little tease about what the quest is about so that we know to be excited on Valentine's Day?
Of course. I'll read the blurb out for you. It is the concluding part of Illusional Reality, but we've done it so it can be a standalone because the backstory goes
okay.
in through the book from the beginning, so you understand who she is and what's been going
you
on.
You won't be lost.
So... Exactly.
Good.
When Hattie notices a Ticinian crystal glowing, she knows she must stick to her word and return to her homeland, Asaya. Knowing her kinsmen needed her, there was no hesitation, even though there was more to lose than just her life. Once more, a prophecy informs the reader of oracles that only Asaya can stop the war and save not just her people, but the rest of Numak from Kovon's psychotic plans. Along with three other companions, Thyre is sent on a perilous quest to locate a crystal eye which holds an evil known as the Dark Force. The group are tried and tested throughout the journey by monsters, death, and courage. New friendships will be formed and others lost. Thyre's power becomes stronger and a second will threatens to take over her mind, body, and soul. A terrifying surprise waits for them in the city of Helcon. Will they survive? Will Thyre return to Ticinia for the final showdown with Kovon? Find out by reading a thrilling concluding part of Illusional Reality.
Very nice. Now, the first part, is the title of the first book, Illusional Reality?
It is, yeah. The duology, I knew it was going to be a duology, but it could have been a trilogy. But I decided to keep it as a duology. And so I didn't want to call it Illusional Reality 2. And because it is
right.
all about this quest, this journey that she has to take and the tests that she's been given and how she has to survive and help her companions. But she's also trying to control a second will inside her that is not a good part of her. So she's faced with a lot on this quest. So that's why I have the title as the quest. But for the first book, Illusional Reality, if I just quickly read you this blurb. Nobody expects to stare death in the face, only to find out your entire life is a lie. Rescued by Salco, marketing executive Becky finds herself in an unknown magical world filled with happy people that try to forget her land is on the brink of destruction. Becky will soon learn that her arrival is no accident. If learning that she is the Thyre, the heir of the enchanting land, isn't enough, she's then told by an oracle prophesies that she will save the gentle Ticinians from slavery and domination by Darthorn, the warlord of Sphinx. It's at a festival when she's introduced to the Ticinian Council and her kinsmen that she learns the whole truth. The Council are so certain that a union between Darthorn's son Kovon and Thyre will create peace between the two lands. However, Darthorn has plans for Ticinia, as does Kovon for Thyre, and neither are good. And although her future has been planned, if she's to save Ticinia, she must marry Kovon, gives her heart to another. A love that is forbidden and dangerous. Illusional Reality is a story about hope, courage, love, and sacrifice.
Very nice.
It's in the ebook and paperback, and it's on special at the moment for just $1.99.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so everyone should go grab it if you love YA. So how old is our main character?
She's working as an executive in a marketing firm. I think she's around about 18, 19.
So she's like a phenom in marketing.
She's a powerhouse. She's a really hard worker, but she has no social life. And for her, it's all about doing the job, getting it done, going home, having something to eat, and going back to work the next day. So, she's a hardworking girl, lady, we'll call her. And like I say, she soon finds out that everything that she knows about her life is a lie, and she's adopted, and she's not from Earth. She's from another dimension, and she has special powers, and everything comes out. And of course, if you could put yourself in this situation, and one minute you're living your life, and the next minute you're somewhere magical or whatever, you're going to think that it's a dream. You know,
right?
That what she's seeing is an illusion. And it's not until she actually speaks with her dead parents, who were, of course, the royalty of that land, that she realizes who she really is. And then, of course, she finds out what she's there to do. And again, she's not happy about that. You know, you take away everything from her, and then you now expect me to marry the evil warlord. You know, who do you think you are, and who do you think I am? I'm not going to do that. So she's very, very stubborn, and she's very strong-willed. Once she gets to know her kinsmen, she gets to know the Decinians and what they've gone through, and of course she finds out exactly who Darthorn and Qo'Von are, then of course she steps up and she takes her place and does what she needs to do.
Nice. So it's sort of a coming of age story, right? She's finding her way.
It certainly is. Yeah, the first one certainly is a coming of age. It has some reviewers said it has some about women's rights. It talks about women's rights and about a religious side of it, but not to do with our religion, but their religion. And there's lots of little plots going through. It's not just paranormal romance fantasy. It's lots of different kind of plots going through the whole book. There's lots of themes.
Nice. Well, was this your first YA fantasy book? Because I saw you write in a bunch of different genres. Was this your first outing of that?
It was, yes. I've always wanted to do fantasy ever since I read Philip Pullman's novels, The Northern Lights and Subtle Knife. His Dark Materials, there we go. When I read that trilogy, and I just got addicted, and then, of course, Lord of the Rings came out, and I was just, that's it. I was just blown away. And it was coming back from the cinema after actually watching the first film that the idea of illusionality came out. By the time I come home, and I was talking to my husband about it in the car, I was telling him all about these characters and this world and what's going to happen. And, you know, it was there. It was already built up. It was like it already existed. So, yeah, Lord of the Rings just inspired me so much to write Illusional Reality. But many people have said that there's no stereotyping. There's no fantasy stereotyping in my novels. There's no wizards. There's no goblins, elves, trolls,
right.
Nothing like that. Every creature in Illusional Reality is new. Every magical thing that can be done has a new name. The characters, they're all made up. You know, fantasy is amazing because everything you write about can be true because people have to believe it,
right?
Because it's fantasy. And so it's amazing to write fantasy. You can really allow your imagination to go.
Right. And you can really be God when you're writing fantasy, because you're creating the whole world and everything else.
Yeah, exactly. It's with other genres, like with the MC romances, your world building is the motorcycle club, and that's about it. But
right.
when you
right.
you have fantasy, you have to build that world, and it has to be believable.
Yeah, and it sounds like with Illusional Reality, you made a really unique world that's sort of like ours, I guess, just a different dimension, right?
No, it's nothing nothing like ours. No, totally different. It's not like a beta Earth. It's just a totally different land. If you think of Rivendell from Lord of the Rings. And then,
so she leaves Earth to go to her world.
Well, she gets taken. She doesn't leave by choice.
Okay. Well, that sounds so fun. And congratulations. It's exciting to have the final book, even if it's only a duology. Every time I finish a series, it's very emotional and I cry because I'm going to miss all of my friends. So what's next for you?
Oh, I'm going totally the opposite way. I have a publisher lined up for a dystopian erotica that I've done, a novella. I've actually been working with another author on it. She's keeping hers as low-key and behind-the-door kind of romance, and I'm making mine more in-your-face erotica. But it's dystopian. It's all about the world-building, somewhere that doesn't exist, but it has to be made believable that people could live in those conditions and those rules and why they are living like they are. So I will be working on that, finding an editor on that and getting that one done. And I also have a MI5 thriller that's about 70% the way done. So we'll do some more work on that sometime. So there are things in the back to concentrate on when I have time to write, because I'm just so busy.
Yeah, you have, besides writing, you also do author promotion, right?
That's it, yeah. I run Author Assist, which are affordable services for authors, whether they're indie authors or contracted authors. I do help them everything from the start with their writing right through to the publication and promoting and marketing after. There's like an a la carte menu where they can look through the list and see where they need help. And pay for services that way, or I work full time for them, which means I work 5 days a week actually promoting and marketing their book and themselves.
Wow, so you are very busy.
I am, yes. Start around about 10 in the morning, finish normally around about 7 or 8 in the evening.
Wow. Yeah, because you're promoting your books, other authors' books, and you have to find time to write them too.
Exactly. I mean, writing is on the back burner now. Promotion for my book is really important. But again, my clients have to come first because they're paying for me to do my job, and I can't, you know, not do what I'm being paid for to promote my own stuff. So I don't work weekends. That's left for me. So while I've got these two paperbacks out, then the book comes out in Valentine's, I'll be spending those weekends promoting and doing as much as I can on those days.
Wow. So what was your writing journey like? I mean, when did you always want to be a writer, or were you a big reader and promoting authors and then you got a great idea, or how did it happen for you?
Oh, it started when I was very, very young. I was in my upper school, which is, I think, 13 to 16. UK, we're talking now, because I'm from the UK. And I spent one summer writing this book, and it was all short stories, all different genres and poetry that I'd made up and I'd written myself, and I put it all, stamped it together, you know, stapled it together and made a pretty little cover for it. And it was just for me, and I was really proud of it. I was so proud of it that I took it to school to show my English teacher. I got it back covered with red pen mark for punctuation errors and sarcastic comments. And she basically turned around to me and said, "You'd never be a writer." So when something like that happens to you, it's an incentive to say, yeah, it's an incentive to say, no, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I wanted to prove myself and her wrong. And I did. The first short story that first turned into my first book, it was in Times of Violence. It was an 18-page short story, and it was after reading Essie Hinton's The Outsiders. I love the idea of these rebels being outlaws, being who they were, breaking the law, but also the family atmosphere, them doing anything for each other. They would die for each other. All they cared about was these people in their group. And just the idea of that and the passion, that made me write In Times of Violence. So it started off with an 18-page short story, and then I picked it up one day, started work on it, and it turned out to be a novel. And it is actually still my bestseller to date. And
wow.
That's one special as well.
And it's called In Times of Violence?
$2 for anyone. Yeah, In Times of Violence, young adult edition, and it's $2. And that's on Amazon and all other book outlets.
Very cool. And how did you branch into all the different genres you write in, horror and romance? And are those just things you like to read and you got story ideas? Or what brought you down all the different paths?
It was, I really wanted to find a publisher or agent for In Times of Violence. At the time, we're going back many, many years ago, there wasn't e-books. It was all paperback. And so you really did need to... You really did need to find a publisher, even if it was a vanity publisher. You needed to find someone to actually sell your books. There was no such thing as really independent publishing back there. So I was desperate, and I did all my research, and it was like, oh, when you send your CV in and you send your synopsis, make sure you have some public publications already. So I thought, oh, the only way I can do that is by writing short stories, flash fiction, and poetry, and send them into newspapers, magazines, online websites, things like that. And so I did that, and I got a really good long CV with where all my work had been published. Didn't give me an agent or a publisher. What it did give me was a chance to put together two collections. One's called Heads and Tails, and the other one is called Undressed, which are full of flash fiction, which is what we call one-minute fiction. It's like 1.5 pages, but it's a story, start, middle, and end. And some writers find that really hard to do, but I absolutely love writing flash fiction. So with some poetry, some prose,
me too,
some excerpts, and flash fiction, I made these two collections. And the thing about them is they're not one genre. They are different stories from different... There's sci-fi, there's fantasy, there's a horror, there's comedy even, you know, and it's different writing styles as well. Some people have actually said, I didn't know that author was the same author that wrote that piece because it was all me, but I wrote different writing styles as well as being able to write in different genres. So that's what got me into being able to enjoying writing in different genres.
Yeah, when I teach writing classes, I got my start in short stories as well. And I always talk about that short stories is the most freeing kind of writing you can do, because you can be brave and you can try something you've never tried before, because instead of taking months to write, you can write it in a few days and get it polished and ready to go. So yeah, when I was writing, I met Ray Bradbury, and he said, you know, write a short story every week for a year and see where you are. And I thought, what? it. And then it was so addictive, I did it for a year and a half. And one of the most thrilling parts was trying to find an idea for a story. And then next thing I know, I'm writing a Western. I'm like, what? And it was one of my favorites. And yeah, so you would never get that opportunity if all you're going to write are novels. Short stories are really, anything's possible. For a writer, I always recommend, short stories.
I had my fans actually help me out when it came to writing flash fiction. I'd ask them for 3 random words. Then after a week, I'd write them all down in a list, and I'd pick one word from that list, one word from another one. So I've got 3 totally random words, and then I would write my flash fiction on it.
Nice. I love that. I would get so desperate sometimes that I would go look at weird news stories. Like, I had never heard of a rogue wave, but they were talking about all the ships that had sank on the Great Lakes here in the States. And I'm like, how does a ship sink on a lake? And then I found out about these scary things called rogue waves. I was like, oh, my gosh. So I wrote a shipwreck story and a rogue wave story and all the stuff all from a crazy news. So you never know where you'll get inspired.
Exactly. You can be inspired by anything and anything. And if you are a writer, always keep a pen and paper with you. When you have a dream, if you remember it, write it down. Any ideas, even if they're not for what you're writing, write them down. I've just got pads and just suitcases of old writing pads where all my notes were for all of my short stories, my flash fiction, my ideas. Some of them I used, some of them I didn't. And I may go back and use them later on. Who knows? But always.
Right.
Always
you never know.
Yeah.
Well, who are some of your favorite writers? I always like to add to my to be read list. Who are your go-to authors?
Well, I love paranormal romance, so it would be Cassandra Clare would be on the top of the list. Yeah, Janine Frost.
Good.
The Hush Hush series by Becca Fitzpatrick, which is about Fallen Angel.
Oh, I haven't heard
one of my
that
favorite
one.
Hush Hush, one of my favorite paranormal series. You should read that.
Okay,
I'll
look it up.
And then, of course, your usual Token. Pullman and Rowling, and I'm even going to say Stephanie Myers from Twilight, because they weren't brilliant written books, but the actual story itself, the plot was beautiful. Of course, Essie Hinton, who it's because of her books that I actually started writing in the first place.
Yeah, that you started writing. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, The Outsiders. And you weren't even you were in the UK when you were reading that, right?
Yeah, I was in my school. I borrowed it from the library. I never took it back. and then went and read all of her others. She's at Tex and Taming of the Star Runner. That was then, This Is Now, and Rumblefish. So I've got all of her books. And if I, when they ask you in interviews, if you could meet anybody, who would it be? It would be Essie Hinton, because I just wanted to tell her how much those books mean to me and what she's helped me do.
Yeah. Oh, I love that story. I hope you didn't get all of her books, though, from the library.
No, I just didn't take the Outsiders back, the rest on my board.
The others were purchased.
The original. The others were purchased. Yes, no. Steel book.
Well, I can't believe we're running out of time, but before we go, do you have an author newsletter, or how should readers get in touch with you?
Yeah, I mean, if they go over to find me on Facebook, Karina Gantis Author, if you click on the actual banner on my page, all of my links for the mailing list, for the Illusional Reality Facebook page, for the Outlaw Facebook page, all links for my books are all under the banner. So you'll be able to find everything there.
Oh, good. Oh, great. Awesome. And if you are an author, you should get in touch with Karina about some of her promo stuff. Will they find that on the Facebook page also?
Yeah, there's also a link there for Author Assist, but it's a, I have a separate business profile on Facebook. So you're looking for Author Assist Karina Gantus, and I can send you a listing of all the services and the pricing. And of course, I'm there to chat with anyone who needs help. That doesn't cost anything.
Ah, perfect. Well, thanks so much for coming on, and good luck with
thanks
the
book. Thanks for joining us on Book Lights. Be sure to connect with us at www.readersentertainment.com for articles, blogs, videos, and podcasts that matter to readers.